Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here for this Thursday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. We are a Sports Ethos presentation, of course, and I'm your host, Joe Orico. You can find me over on Twitter at JoeOrico99 and also at EthosFantasyBB. That's where you get all of our new content, whether it's podcasts, articles, polls, news and notes, everything. You can find it over there. And if you're not somebody who uses social media, you can check out SportsEthos.com and get everything right from the source. Guys, we are going to be talking about Wednesday's games, the things that stood out to me, but I do want to first talk about Mike Trout because this is going to probably be one of the bigger news stories of the entire season. Mike Trout tore his meniscus in his left knee. He's been placed on the injured list, and I'm not sure if the surgery's happened yet. I don't believe it has, but he will be undergoing a procedure to repair the meniscus in his knee. So this one came out of the blue the other day. I was not expecting it. I don't think many people were expecting it. And maybe, you know, some people, a lot of people, we'll talk about this in a little bit. People were knowing that Mike Trout's injury, quote unquote, injury prone and avoiding him or whatever. But I don't think anybody was expecting this the other day. Just completely out of the blue. I think it was a Jeff Passan tweet that announced it. And I was absolutely stunned. From a fantasy point of view, this sucks. Mike Trout had been having the best year that he'd had in probably 3-4 years. He did 10 home runs, stolen 6 bases already through the first month of the season. The home runs are not really surprising. The stolen bases coming back are quite surprising. He's on a pace to hit like 30-plus stolen bases for the first time in almost a decade. That was the surprising part, and I think a lot of people were very happy to see Mike Trout being Mike Trout again. Now he's going to be out for quote-unquote foreseeable future. The question is, how long is that going to be? And I don't really know. I was listening to the CBS Fantasy Baseball podcast yesterday, and Chris Towers was talking about the different timelines for meniscus injuries, for surgeries, and there are some guys who've come back within 2 weeks, and there are some guys who have missed the rest of the season because of the same procedure. So it's very hard to pinpoint a timeline. Mike Trout does not have a long history of knee problems. He has a long injury history, but it's not like this is something we were waiting to happen, his knee to give out. This is kind of just random. So if it was like the third or fourth injury to this knee, it would be a little bit different. For me, I don't think this is that serious. The fact that they put him on the 10-day IL versus the 60-day IL indicates that they're not expecting this to be something that is a lengthy, lengthy absence. Hopefully we can get Mike Trout back sometime in middle of June, maybe July. And then in that case, you'd still get, hypothetically, July, August, September, maybe a little bit of June. And then, you know, you're pretty fine considering where you drafted Mike Trout in the sixth round or so. And then he's probably still returning that value for you. Mike Trout is ridiculous. This is why it was always very hard to fade him, even if the injury stuff and the team around him sucks, because it's very hard to predict what a generational player is going to do. They can just bounce back without really there being any reason for it and without there being many people who are really calling for it either. Mike Trout, I don't know if anybody this year was saying Mike Trout's going to steal bases again, but there you have it. He was stealing. Maybe it caused the injury. I am very far from a doctor. I'm not sure if this was something that, you know, the extra running exacerbated the knee. I think it's bullshit, honestly. Like, if you're stealing a base, you're running 90 feet there, less than 90 feet considering the lead. They're doing runs all different kinds in the outfield and pregame, after the game, whatever. It's not like that 90-foot stretch that he ran 6 times this year is likely the cause of it. Maybe it is, but I'm willing to believe that there's just a couple other things going on. And we haven't really been told a lot in terms of this specifics of the injury here. I don't think he's had the surgery, but we haven't really been told that. In terms of the exact timeline, we don't really know either. Maybe they don't know, and that's why we don't know. But Mike Trout is not a drop. There are some people who are already dropping Mike Trout. He's fallen from 99% rostered in Yahoo down to 97. Not a lot of people, but that is still thousands and thousands of people who are cutting Mike Trout. Maybe it's people without IL spots. Maybe it's people who have their entire IL filled already. I would really advise against dropping him because there is a chance, I don't know the probability, but there's a chance that Mike Trout gets back on the shorter end of the timeline and you're getting him back maybe in mid-June. Maybe he's gone 6 weeks and then he's back and then maybe he's not stealing as much, but he's still generally Mike Trout. If you're cutting him now, it's because you better be damn certain he's done for the year. Like, that's the only case, and I'm not certain of that. Nobody's certain of that. To cut a guy like Mike Trout with first-round upside, you better be very, very, very certain about that drop. And at this point, there's nothing out there to lead me to any degree of certainty about Trout. Could be 2 weeks, could be the whole season. I have no idea. But to drop him today or yesterday, whenever you did it, I think is jumping the shark a little bit. It's not something that I would be doing in most cases, pretty much in any case. Even if you're in like a 4-6 team league, Mike Trout is that special that he does warrant the hold. Even through if it's like a month, 6 weeks, 2 months injury, Mike Trout is worth holding, and maybe not in a 6-team league, but pretty much every league he is worth holding. Specifically if you have IL, there's no reason to be dropping him if you do have those spots. Now, if you have those free spots or not is another question, but I'm not at the point of dropping Mike Trout anywhere. Just want to quickly talk about the way that some people are reacting to Mike Trout's injury. Acting like they are savants in the baseball world because they thought that Mike Trout was going to get hurt this year. I think it's just disingenuous crap, personally. You may not know what I'm talking about. Twitter has been abuzz over the last couple days with Mike Trout injury talk and quote-unquote analysis and people who want to act like they're medical professionals giving their opinions, and it's all very tiresome. It really is. Mike Trout has a history of injuries. We know this, right? It's not something that you could have predicted that he was going to have a knee injury. If you wanted to say that Mike Trout was likely to get banged up at some point, sure. If anybody's calling that they said Mike Trout was going to have a knee injury this year, they're full of shit, and then you should not listen to them. This was actually the year, you know, as much as everybody talks about, you know, I was fading Mike Trout, it was the good call to fade him. This was the year to invest in Mike Trout. If there was ever a year, it was this year because he was the cheapest he had ever been. Mike Trout was going in the sixth round, usually. It depends if you're in a 12-team, 10-team, 15-team. But generally, you were getting him in the 70s, the 80s, maybe in the 60s overall. But he was heavily discounted for the first time really ever. Last year, I think he was a second-rounder, third-rounder. This was the cheapest he'd ever been going back to his rookie year. And if you bought Mike Trout in his rookie year, it was obviously amazing things happened for you. This was a year where it made a lot of sense to buy back in, considering where he was going. Now, I drafted him one time. It was my second draft of the year. It's the draft that I did in Arizona when I was at the First Pitch Conference. The league that I'm in with Frank Stanfill and Jenny Butler and Kevin Hastings and a few people you guys know. That's the only league where I drafted Mike Trout. So it's not about the shares aspect because people are talking about, oh, if you have a lot of shares, you're obviously going to be more disappointed, but it shouldn't change the way that you're talking about Mike Trout over these last couple days. If you're happy that a generational player is going to miss time, significant time or not, because it gives you a slightly better chance of winning your fantasy league, I think you're a bad person. And maybe that's just going a little too far with it. Maybe you're not a bad person, but I think you're in this for the wrong reasons. There are people who are talking about how, you know, fantasy baseball, this is like part of their livelihood, and fading the correct players is a part of the process. Absolutely. First of all, I think it's weird that people would use it as part of their livelihood. Maybe it ends up being that way, but this shouldn't be part of your livelihood. If fantasy baseball is, you know, if you're using fantasy baseball to live on, then you should call 1-800-GAMBLER probably, because it's just not something that you can do. You might throw thousands of dollars into leagues 1 year, and then, oops, the guy who is not injury prone at all gets hurt or whatever, gets hit with a pitch, and he's not like, it's just a bad investment vehicle in terms of your only source of income. If we're talking about this is your life, you know, it's a big part of my life, but it's not the only thing. It can't be the only thing for people, but I think that kind of mindset is what's leading people to be happy about this because they faded Mike Trout. And again, it's not a lot of people are happy about this. It's a small, vocal, stupid minority on Twitter who are celebrating Mike Trout getting hurt. And they'll claim that they're not celebrating, that they're just making you a better fantasy player by telling you their process. And I'm just tired of it. Like, I just don't understand why they think they're helping anybody. These people who are celebrating Mike Trout being hurt and saying, I told you so, it's the process, blah, blah, blah. It's like you're not helping anybody. You're trying to gloat, and it's really ridiculous. I'm not going to name anybody. You guys know who I'm talking about. If you don't, you can go find it yourself on Twitter. It's just something I wanted to rant about a little bit because it's just been 2 days consecutively of bullshit on the internet. If you have to, if you make a point and you have to spend the next 2 days constantly defending it, the odds are you made a shitty point that most of the world does not agree with. Mike Trout is a special player. Every game that he is out is a detriment to baseball, and that's where we'll leave it. But I do want to talk about what happened yesterday. Let's start off with Shota Imanaga. He's quickly established himself as one of the best starting pitchers in baseball. Threw another gem last night, 7 innings, 3 hits, no earned runs, 7 strikeouts, and 1 walk. 26% CSW with a 17.2% swing strike rate. 35 strikeouts and 4 walks through his first 34 and 2/3 innings, not to mention the sub-1 whip and ERA. He is an absolute stud. An absolute stud, and this is a call where, again, early victory laps are kind of, you can't really do it in any way, but I did say a few weeks ago, if you can buy Imanaga, I would be buying high off of that rocky start because I don't think people really valued him enough. Now I think that people are valuing him enough, and now it's a point where he's very, very expensive if you want to buy him. I don't think you can do that. But for those who were able to buy in and get shares or trade for him, congratulations, because he looks fantastic, and the supporting numbers are also very, very good. He's not overpowering, but he manages to get it done. You know, he throws in the low 90s, 92, 93. I think his fastball averaged 91 yesterday, but he's just able to use his pitch mix very effectively and make batters look very stupid. So Shota Imanaga, he's got to be considered a candidate for the NL Cy Young at this point. He's been absolutely amazing. You know who else has been absolutely amazing is Seth Lugo. On an incredible run, he continued yesterday in Toronto. 7 innings, 2 hits, 1 earned run, 8 strikeouts, and 2 walks to go along with a 35% CSW. A 7.9 swinging strike rate is not great, but that's generally Seth Lugo. Even with 8 strikeouts over 7 innings, you're looking at a fairly poor swinging strike rate. He's actually been very good dating back to 2021, Seth Lugo, as a reliever. This is not something where he's fully just come out of the blue. It's a pretty decent track record now over the last couple of seasons of him having success. Not to this extent, obviously. He's got an ERA of 160 and a whip of 102, and he's got 5 victories already through the first month of the season. But there are definitely some red flags that we need to point out here. He has, in terms of the expected numbers versus the actual, he's getting lucky. We do need to acknowledge that. He's stranding 91.1% of base runners. That's not something that you can sustain. Average is about 72, 74%. That number is coming back down to earth. The batting average on balls in play against is 246. Generally speaking, we're talking about 300. He's been a little bit lower than average in his career, about 286, but that number will still jump back up 30, 40, 50 points. More balls are going to get through, and you're not going to see a 1.6 ERA and a 1.02 whip for terribly long. Now, when you look at the ERA estimators, the xFIP is 417, the xERA is 412, and the Sierra is 431. Pretty bad stuff. It's not anything that's really, really fantastic. On top of that, his strikeout rate has actually fallen drastically this year, despite the fact we talked about 8 Ks yesterday. And I think even the start before was pretty good for Lugo. It was like 7 strikeouts. We're looking at a 17.6% strikeout rate. 6.3 on the walks is good, but 11.4 K minus walk is the lowest of his entire career, going back to his small cup of coffee in his rookie season with the Mets. But this is bad stuff. Like, it's very good on the surface, but, you know, he's not an overpowering pitcher. He's had a very lucky stretch here, and he will come back down to earth. The thing with Seth Lugo at this point, like a lot of players at this point, is they've established enough. There's enough of the season behind us, and I couldn't believe it yesterday, but we're about 20% of the way through the year. There's enough of the year behind us where people are going to start to believe that this is legit. And I don't think it is with Lugo. A lot of that value is boosted by the 5 victories through 45 innings. He won 8 games in 146 last year, pitching for what was probably a better team than what he's on right now. Wins are very lucky. The strikeouts, even if they get back up to where they were, the strikeouts are never really an asset. He gets it back up 5, 6%, which is not a small task. And then we're at average. So I don't think there's a lot here with Lugo in terms of the long term. These last couple seasons, he's been very good, but he hasn't been overperforming his metrics. He's been right in line with, you know, the 357 ERA last year. He had a 376 xFIP. 2022 was a 360 ERA. It was a 351 xFIP. He's not stranding massive amounts of base runners. The BABIP is right in line with average for those 2 seasons. This year is where you're starting to see things go out of whack a little bit with Lugo. I do think in a trade league, you gotta see what you can get. You're riding it out in every other format because there's obviously no move you can make. But if you can trade Seth Lugo for a top 25, top 30 SP, I would absolutely be looking into that. Let's talk about Luis Gil. He had a fantastic start against the Orioles. 6 1/3, 2 hits, no earned runs, 5 strikeouts, and a walk. 26% CSW and a 9.4% swinging strike rate. Command has been an issue for him, but it is trending in the right direction, it seems. He's only walked 3 batters over his last couple of outings, and he's still only rostered in about 1/3 of Yahoo leagues. You know, there's really not that many pitchers left at this point. We lost Grayson Rodriguez yesterday as well. I don't think that'll be terribly serious, but we don't really know. They're dropping like flies. And a guy like Luis Gil, who has his flaws, but at the same time, pitching for a very good team, he's got 40 strikeouts in 31 innings, 3.19 ERA, 1.19 whip. Again, he's working on that command as well. It is improving. I think that he is a worthy add in all 10-plus team leagues. The caveat being, I would sit him against Houston this week. And as bad as Houston's been as a whole, they rank 5th in WOBA and 4th in WRC Plus as a team. Their offense has been very good. It's not about the offense faltering, but I think a lot of people will see Houston and think they're struggling. I'll start anybody right now. I wouldn't stream anybody against Houston. I put out that streamer chart a couple weeks ago on Twitter, or last week on Twitter. They're a hard do not stream for me unless you have just an immaculate pitcher sitting there on the waiver wire. I really can't get that into streaming against Houston. So I think Heal is a pickup, but he's not somebody that I would really want to be starting this week either, or next week, I should say, not this week. Let's move on to Kenta Maeda. He had a miserable start to the year, but he's really bouncing back. And yesterday was no difference there. 6 innings, 4 hits, 1 earned run, and 5 strikeouts. He did not walk a batter. 34% on the CSW and a 12.6% swinging strike rate. Those are excellent numbers. The thing with Maeda that really worries me more than anything else is the durability. 100 innings pitch roughly should be your expectation. It's not like Maeda's had a durable career, especially the second half of it. Has been pretty bad. I mean, I don't know if a lot of people are even that aware of it, because Maeda, unless you're like a fan of the team that he's been on the last couple of years, which has bounced around Detroit, Minnesota, the Dodgers, unless you're a fan of the team or unless you are owning him in fantasy, I don't know if you'd be aware of the fact that Maeda, the last couple of years, 104 and 106 innings pitched. There's not a lot of durability there at this point in his career. He's not a young guy anymore. He just turned 36 last month. As he gets older, I worry about that durability. It has been a problem for the last couple of years, and at this point, he is lined up to face Cleveland next week as well. So I don't know that this is one where I'd really want him for the long run, and I don't know if it's one where I'd really necessarily want to be streaming him either. Cleveland's been a pretty damn good offense. They're also in the not stream category for me. So I think Maeda is somebody that outside of deeper leagues, outside of 15-teamers, you can pretty happily just leave on your waiver wire. Let's talk about Jose Budo. I said that I messed up in my tweet and said he got back on track against the Mets. That is not correct. He got back on track for the Mets against the Cubs yesterday. 6 innings, 4 hits, 1 earned run, and 6 strikeouts. Couple of walks, but overall, really good stuff. 27% on the CSW. The big number was a 15.7% swinging strike rate. I think that he has proven that he can, you know, more than hold his own in the big leagues at this point. And I'm comfortable with ads pretty much everywhere. I said in 12-teamers, in my tweet, but even if it's a 10-teamer, I think that you can make the exception there. 2.57 ERA, 1.07 WHIP. He's got 31 Ks in 28 innings. I think the team's not going to be nearly as bad as people think either. So I'm definitely on board with an ad of Jose Budo at this point. Let's talk about Rodri Munoz, who I'm sure a lot of people are not terribly familiar with. I can't say that I was very familiar with him either. I'd seen his name a couple times here and there, but honestly, this guy was kind of a mystery to me. He has thrown, before yesterday, he had only made one start in the bigs. It was the week before. And I didn't think there was really much to it. He had a really nice start yesterday, and it was a great matchup against Colorado. And he was fantastic. 6 innings, 3 hits, 7 strikeouts, 1 earned run, 2 walks. 14.6 on the swinging strike rate and 30% CSW. If you added him, like, congratulations, because this was an inspired ad. Only 2% of people on Yahoo are even rostering him right now, and probably some of those came in today. Let's see, 151 ads today, so maybe a percent, probably not even, though. In any case, there was a very small number of you who were in on him for this start. If you were, congratulations, that's excellent. Next week, he's lined up for a Dodgers home to Philly two-step that I think you'd be crazy to put him out there for. It's a really strong avoid for me. The team context sucks. It's really, really bad in terms of matchups. As much as he did very well for you, you thank him for his service and you send him back to the waiver wire. let's move on to the hitting side and talk about Willy Castro. This has been a crazy hot streak for him. He's hitting 400 over the last 2 weeks with a home run, 10 ribbies, 7 runs scored, and 3 stolen bases. Now, Carlos Correa returned, and I had just picked up Castro in a few leagues over the course of the weekend, and I was thinking that it was going to be just a total wasted pickup, that Correa would just go back to playing short. But Castro is very versatile from a real-life and from a fantasy standpoint. He can play the outfield. He can play most infield positions. Just this year, we've seen him at short 18 times, at third base 11 times, in left 4 times, and in center 3 times. And since Correa's come back, they've had him in left, in center, and at third base. So I think that they are going to continue to get him in the lineup wherever they can, specifically with how hot he has been. I think that Castro is somebody that does warrant an add in most leagues. He still feels like a fairly underrated asset, considering what he's been doing, for one, and also considering the eligibility. Second, third, short, and outfield on Yahoo. 4 positions is not something to sneeze at. This is a perfect guy to have, especially in like a 10 or a 12 team league where your team is really deep and you might not have a perfect spot for him on the everyday lineup. He's a great, great piece of bench depth. Whenever you have a guy who has a day off, you're more than likely going to be able to plot him in there, considering how many positions he has. He's going to be able to give you a lot of steals if you ever need to catch up in stolen bases in a given week. Can't forget last year, 33 steals, 9 homers in just 358 at-bats. There is a really fantasy-friendly profile under here as long as he's playing regularly, which, I mean, I think he's going to play pretty regularly for them. I would expect well over 100 games played. I think that he is somebody that is a worthwhile asset. And something that my good friend Vlad Sadler said the other day, I do want to mention, rest of season, whenever people ask rest of season questions, it's very hard to answer them. It's more just a guess than anything else. Do you like Willy Castro or Jose Miranda? Or you like, or not, just want random examples. Do you like Zach Wheeler or Corbin Burns rest of season? It's very, very hard to pinpoint what things are going to look like 4 or 5 months from now. But if you just look at things in a few weeks span, you know, a month, 6 weeks at a time even, which even that might be a little bit too long. Like, I think a month at a time is probably a good amount of time to judge on. So if you think that Castro or anybody can give you a good month or a good few weeks even, it can really depend. If you're in a 15-team league, sometimes you'll just take a week of production if you can get that. But you know, 10, 12-teamers, try and look for the next like couple weeks, maybe a month, as opposed to what the guys are going to be doing for you in September. Because I'm not sure what it's going to look like for Willy Castro in September. But right now he's producing. These last 2 weeks he's a top 20 player, and he needs to be rostered pretty much everywhere. He's only 28% over on Yahoo right now. Let's talk about Tommy Pham. He has been a very welcome addition to the White Sox. He's played 6 games so far, multiple hits in 4 of them, and yesterday he hit his first home run of the year. I think anybody who needs outfield help, any format, any size, can turn to Tommy Pham, and I think that he's going to be a pretty decent asset. He'll be hitting in the top of the order, second probably. That's where he's been for actually every start he's made this year has been batting second. That's what I would expect generally. There's not like a lot of great batters who are going to be taking up those spots in the top of the order. I think that Tommy Pham, you know, outside of very, very shallow leagues where you don't really need to worry about him, 8-team leagues, I think even in a 10-team league, that's where I draw the line of you can probably pick up Tommy Pham. He's going to get regular playing time in that outfield. And again, like the fantasy profile is very, very friendly. 16 home runs, 22 stolen bases last year. He hit .256. It doesn't have to be necessarily that, and I'm sure it won't be quite exactly that. 22 steals might be hard to make up, especially considering he missed the first month of the year. But a very solid asset that's only 4% rostered right now on Yahoo. I think in 15-teamers, specifically Tommy Pham, does carry a lot of value, and he's somebody that you should be looking at adding. 4% is a really, really low number for him. I do want to talk about somebody who was one of my, not I shouldn't say he's a big target of mine. I have him in 4 leagues, but Richie Palacios was somebody that I was pretty intrigued with, and there was a couple reasons. Tampa acquiring somebody, I know it's very basic, it's not analytical or whatever, but whenever Tampa acquires somebody, you take a second look because they're generally a very smart organization. They haven't done things very well so far this year. It hasn't been a great season for them, specifically offensively. But Richie Palacios has actually been a bright spot for them. So last year with St. Louis, it was only 32 games, but he had 6 home runs, 120 WRC+. That was really nice. So far this year, he's slashing .310, .430, .465. 14 runs scored, 3 homers, 6 ribbies, and 4 stolen bases. Most notably, I think, with Richie Palacios is that he is now the everyday number 2 batter for the Rays. That is massive. And I don't know, again, if this is going to stick in the long term. It goes back to what we said about Castro. Maybe it's, this isn't what it looks like at the end of the season. But for right now, while he's batting second, I think he's going to serve managers very, very well, particularly in on-base percentage formats, because that's where he really, really excels in drawing those walks. Almost always you're looking at a walk rate of like 10, 12% or higher. And this year, in the first 25 games of the year, he's walking 16% of the time. He won't be doing this all year. Like, he won't have that kind of walk rate consistently. He won't have a 413 BABIP. He won't be a 164 WRC+. But as a regular member of that lineup, somebody who has a little bit of power, decent speed, I think that he is a very worthwhile asset in most formats at this point. I think he'll settle in as a 15-team type of guy. But for the time being, there is no reason not to take a look in 12-teamers as well. He's a top 200 player, which I know it doesn't sound crazy, 200, whatever, but that's rosterable in pretty much every single fantasy league. Let's talk about Jake Cronenworth here to wrap it up. I still feel like he doesn't get enough credit. I've talked about him a lot this year, specifically in the first week or two of the season. He cooled off a little bit, but even that being said, 265 batting average, 343 on base, 470 slug, 17 runs, 24 ribbies, and 5 homers. That's a great month. 24 RBI, 5 homers, and a 265 average in 1 month. That's a great month, especially from somebody that you weren't expecting really anything out of. If we had seen that line at the end of the month from Ronald Acuna, that he had 5 homers, 24 steals, 17 runs, you would have been fine with it, especially seeing the way it's happened now, the everything that's gone with him. But you'd be happy with that number from a lot of players, let alone Jake Cronenworth. It's an amazing month, not to mention first base and second base eligibility, or the fact that he's sandwiched between Tatis and Machado in that order. 65% on Yahoo, it's felt low for a while. It's fluctuated a little bit up and down, but it's just too low. Actually, it's gone up to 67 today. People are buying back in a little bit, and you should be. He's a top 70 player this year. He's got a great lineup spot. Even if it's just against righties, most pitchers are righties. I get into it every now and then. Like last year, I got into it with somebody when I said Will Benson was an everytime player, an everyday player. He played 20 of the last 21 games, and people are like, oh, well, it's not every day necessarily. It's pretty much every day. Jake Cronenworth is the same thing. He's nearly an every single day type of player, and he's sandwiched around really good teammates in that lineup. So I think that if he's still sitting out there, he makes for a great ad. There's everything pointing for a good season here from Jake Cronenworth. He's already got half the home runs and half the ribbies he had last season in a full year. He only had 10 homers and 48 ribbies all of last season. We're already at 5-24. So I think we're going to be just fine here with Jake. If he's out there, go and pick him up. But that'll do it for us, guys. I appreciate all of you coming in and checking out the show. Go and throw me a follow over on Twitter, at JoeRico99, and be sure to check out Ethos Fantasy BB as well. And, of course, sportsethos.com is where you get everything right from the source. Guys, we'll be back again to wrap up the week. But until then, take care and have a great night.
Transform your home in one weekend with paint from Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening, smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today. Save big money at Menards.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.